Good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 3rd of March. Very nice to have you with us, and we invite you to join us. Let me introduce our panel today, and then I will give you all of your instructions as to how you can be part of the program, and then we will go off and make great radio together.
Aww.
Okay, there you go. Thank you. First of all, WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir.
Well, I'm with you, but at 2:30 this morning, I got a flat tire, so I'm with you. We'll tell the secret a little bit remotely. The reason I say that is that and the AAA, which is a wonderful group, didn't show till 7.
Yeah.
So,
they probably don't get up as early as you do.
Right, they don't guarantee maybe 30-minute response at 2:30 in the morning.
Right.
Sorry.
Maybe hard to get a...
Well, I didn't ask them at 2:30
especially where
in the morning.
You are.
I waited till 4:30 in the morning. Yeah. No, they're very good people. I like the people who they have here, and they're very good. And so I'm here. The point is, I'm here by remote magic, and I just wanted everybody to know that
we have
a little we have a little bit of a technical problem. I drop out sometime, and so I think we should confess that part of it.
I've heard that about you.
Okay. Well, we're.
Aren't you sweet?
Yeah, I am. You're right. I am. I'm very sweet.
What happened to your tire?
I don't know. There's the paranoid thought, and then there's the probable thought.
All right. The paranoid thought is that you thought somebody went after him?
Slashed your tire.
The governor did it.
We'll find out. We're going to have a forensic examination of the tire when the guy puts it on. Right.
Okay. Now, were you okay? Did you get in the car and then realize it was flat, or did you?
Oh no! I was at the bottom of the hill.
Okay.
Sudden, I heard the yellow light came on. You know, they
those are bad lights.
And I got out. I looked at it. I said, "Oh boy, oh boy!" And then I said, "I'm not going to stay down at the bottom of the hill." So I drove it on the tire back to the house, which is probably going to mean
new rims,
a new car.
Nah, not new rims, but new tire.
All right. Well, we wish you well in that. Let me also introduce political consultant Libby Post, who is with us. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Joe.
And SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
All right. And all right. So we also want to tell you how you can be...
Wait, Joe. Did you think that both Libby and Rosemary, in their acceptance of your morning greeting, took a particular tone, sort of a tone?
Well, it's hard to say, Alan, because it's almost fake, because I'm saying hello to them, but we've already had a very spirited, lovely... We already hugged in the green room. You know, we already greeted each other, so it's sort of the second time. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
We've been talking for half an hour.
We've both had our cigarettes. We're done.
But yes, there didn't seem quite the excitement in their voice. But that'll come.
They took a tone.
We're just so depressed and deflated, Alan.
I'm cold.
That you're not here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're sorry he's not here. That's it.
So let me just remind you, roundtable@wamc.org to get in on the conversation. roundtable@wamc.org. Also, you can go to wamc.org/roundtable. Today's post 3/3/15. Click on it and you can take part, and that will be fun as well. Okay. So let's go with the big story of the day, which, of course, is the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu will be speaking before joint session of Congress today at 11 o'clock, which we will be bringing you here live on WAMC. And it should be starting around 11-ish, is what we were told. Mm-hmm. So we will bring it to you 11-ish. And President Obama and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel offered radically divergent approaches to the perils of a nuclear-armed Iran on Monday, even as they try to cool down the personal nature of a long-distance dispute that has inflamed relations between the U.S. and Israel for more than a month. On the eve of Mr. Netanyahu's hotly debated address to Congress, the two leaders separately disclaimed personal animosity while laying out what amounts to the biggest policy schism between the two countries in years. Mr. Obama defended his diplomatic efforts to negotiate a deal with Iran, while Mr. Netanyahu presented them as dangerously naive.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think, while I was listening to Netanyahu speak yesterday, I was thinking, well, this is pretty much what he's going to say, right? This is a a preview, a teaser, but it's also kind of the sum and substance.
Yeah, it was fun yesterday. We got a hint at the truly deep division between Obama and Netanyahu on how to proceed on Iran. And it is not anything that you can talk away. Netanyahu basically wants Iran to have no capability, no potential to develop nuclear power. And the United States, Obama believes that that's crazy. They already have the knowledge. They already can do it. Much of the delay in their going forward has come from the United States doing things like messing up their nuclear facilities with cyber weapons and refusing to send certain technologies. Once you have the knowledge, you can't put it away. That's like, isn't that the parable right in the Bible of the tree of knowledge? And so that it's far better to negotiate trade deals where they can make uranium, but they're going to ship it to Russia, which we know have bombs, and they're going to make pledges on not to use the bombs, not to make bombs. And that's a completely different point of view. Israel and the United States do not have the same interest or the same thoughts about Iran.
Alan, I'm interested in what you think about that, but also, do you think Congress and specifically Speaker Boehner is getting what he expected when the invitation was originally given?
Absolutely. I do. I think he is getting a tremendous... In fact, I think one of the things that's most interesting about this, Joe, is that there does seem to be some real divisiveness among the Democrats. The Republicans are sort of hanging together on this and reaping the rewards of having made this invitation. I thought Rosemary's analysis of what was going on was right to the point. Although I have to say, if you look at Netanyahu in Israel with the Palestinians, this is not a guy who has made it easier to come to any kind of a solution. So his toughness is just toughness. But where and what at what point does it pay dividends and say, okay, we can make some kind of a deal which allows us to live together? I don't see that, and I'm a little concerned about that.
Yeah, Obama used some of that snarkiness that he has a hard time bottling sometime and pointed out that Netanyahu had cried gloom and doom if the United States even began talking to Iran. And the president went through and pointed out that none of the things that Netanyahu had predicted that would happen actually did. And I understand that. What, 55 congressmen have said that they will not go to the speech.
Right. Yeah, it plays... Netanyahu doesn't want there to be a resolution because it plays into his doomsday scenario that plays so well with the far right in Israel and keeps him in power. And, you know, I think that they're being short-sighted that, you know, Iran is coming to a table, which they've never come to before. So let's see where this goes, and let's see if we can live peacefully amongst some of us. I mean, I know that there are plenty of the nations who don't want to live peacefully amongst us. Iran was our arch enemy. I'm not saying that they're our best friend now, but at least they're at a table, and we're talking, which is better than not talking at all.
Yeah, the whole idea of stopping the bomb is an interesting one. We got North Korea, for example, to agree not to make a bomb, and they didn't for a certain period of time, and the treaty ended, and now they're making more bombs than ever, or at least they have the potential to be doing that. So,
but I don't know if they have the red buttons that they need.
Yeah. Well, so the whole thing is.
Well, there's another thing to be looked at.
What's that?
Another thing to be looked at here, and that is. The Iranian people, you know, they elected what they considered to be the progressive in that last election. And it is not the same as the North Korean, populace, which is under the absolute foot, of the great leader or his son or whatever you call him. This is a group of people who are very bright, want the sanctions off, want peace, and have been testing the waters with their top Ayatollah, and pushing, and you can see that pushing. So I think it's a different scenario.
Yeah, I think clearly Obama is playing on that, too, that it has become progressively more liberal and definitely desirous of joining the world again. And they're counting on that to continue. And Netanyahu is not. He is just seeing the immediate threat, which is understandable, I think. But there's reasons for them both to think the way they do.
So not to be cynical here, but so he comes, he speaks, he goes home. Does anything change? Does our position change? Does anything we do change? Does anything they do change? Or are we just we're here for the pageantry of it for this hour this morning from 11 to 12?
I don't think anything changes. Yeah. I don't think anything changes. In other words, Obama is negotiating. Kerry is negotiating. They know what they're doing. They have that. But the one thing that I think that Netanyahu gets out of this is he puts pressure to make a better deal.
Well, I've said all along, I think Netanyahu is campaigning. He's in some trouble at home, according to polls there. He's going to come here and be this impassioned spokesman for the future of Israel. I think this is about his campaign.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and get some letters on this and move on to other issues as well before the news break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, Rosemary, Libby, I'm Joe. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Troy Chromatic Concert, presenting La Violon de Roy with conductor Mathieu Lussier, piano soloist Marc-André Hamelin, March 10th at 7:30 p.m. at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, troychromaticconcerts.org. The office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, Orthodontic, Cosmetic, and General Dentistry, serving the Hudson Valley since 1986, woodstockdentist.com. And Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design featuring Cambria, quartz countertops, Murillat cabinetry, and more. Designer consultations available, curtislumber.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable for this Tuesday, the 3rd of March. Very nice to have you with us. Let me remind you, you can write to us, roundtable@wamc.org. And, well, people write to us all the time, and we're going to give you an example of that right now, aren't we, Alan?
We are. Our very good friend Bob, who is always good for a laugh, writes, wondering if PM Netanyahu will take a cue from Angela Merkel and deliver his speech today in Hebrew.
Well, there you you know, the chance is there, and I'm sure NPR won't do anything about it. Yes.
That's not going to happen. It's a good joke, though. Yeah, okay, joke. To which I responded, ha! Okay, from Henry says, hi, all. I believe it was the BBC News on WAMC this morning that reported that the German government said more progress has been made in the nuclear-related talks with Iran recently than in the last 10 years of effort. And that's exactly what I think I was trying to point out about putting pressure on the Iranians, because they know that this is a time to get out from under.
Oof.
All right. Alan said that there would be possibilities of dropouts, and that is an example of a dropout. Yes. So we'll – I was going to see if
deal
I could –
meant not a lot.
You're back.
What?
No, you went away for a little while, but you're back now. See, you told us there could be a dropout.
I come, I go. You know, that's the way it is.
Yes.
Thinking of – thinking of what? Michelangelo. Okay. So so that's one thing that we heard. And that was from Henry. And then Glenn says, nukes are bad. Chernobyl. That's what Glenn says. And Tom was sticking
Chernobyl,
right to what we're talking.
Chernobyl was a nuclear power plant. It didn't make weapons. Just FYI.
Well, I think this is an overarching nukes
right,
are bad.
Right.
Nukes are bad in general.
Period.
Nuclear
right.
energy.
Nuclear energy, period.
Right.
And are we good on the letters, or is that it?
Yes.
We have more? Maybe I lost Alan again.
Yeah, let's. We should go on until we hear.
Okay.
From him.
Well, we have. We only have about 30 seconds, so let me just.
Albany and how well they're treated. And how well they're treated. Yeah.
All right. And
I did, so I asked. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you went out again. So we're gonna work on that, Alan. Actually, we're gonna work on Jessica O'Rourke is pushing buttons. So we're gonna get that work done. We're gonna take a break. We'll come back. We'll get you reconnected. And we'll be in good shape, and then we'll be able to hear you. And we'll be back.
I'm here.
Okay, cool. We'll remind you, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage, WAMC.org/roundtable. Today's post, 3:15. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning, and welcome back to the roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post is here as well. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And Alan, we got a couple other letters, and then we'll go on to new topics.
Right. Well, I hope I stay with you.
I'm sure we got a fix.
We heard from... Yeah, well, I don't know. So we just heard from Susan, who says, I wish you wouldn't run his speech. Republicans are so disrespectful to Obama. Would be a huge outcry if Dems did such a thing to Bush. I'm glad you wrote, Susan. I knew somebody would. We are not in the business of censoring. We want everybody to hear everything. You know what my views are on this, and they are not consistent with what you're implying. We will, in fact, run these things, whether they're popular or not popular, because our audience deserves to hear them. It's that simple. Joe, did you want to get in on that?
Yes, I believe, we were all in on the discussion as to taking this or not, and it was the feeling that, first of all, if you don't hear it here, where else do you hear it, especially on the radio dial, and that it is a global news event that is happening, and we have the opportunity to bring it to you, and I think that it's important that we do so.
Great. And Tim says, this is not about Israel or Netanyahu, really. Although I want what is best for Israel, the U.S., and the Palestinians, this is about the disintegration of civility, respect for rules, and respect for the U.S. Constitution. I've seen conservatives cry states' rights when it serves them, then vote in a president against the will of the people. The U.S. Constitution is clear in capital letters. Foreign policy and diplomacy is the job of the executive branch in capital letters. This is just a continuation of the opposed, just to oppose policy that the Republicans started under President Clinton. And when you have a senator throwing a snowball, in quotes, to claim that there is no climate change, I just hope that politics and lack of respect do not contribute to our extinction as a species. And like that.
Cool.
That's what I got.
All right. Let's move on to other topics and find out. We'll get you riled up on other things. So here's a story that I don't understand quite. We were talking about this in the break, and we'll see, Alan, what you make of this. But Hillary Rodham Clinton exclusively used a personal email account to conduct government business as Secretary of State, according to State Department officials, and may have violated federal requirements that officials' correspondence be retained as part of the agency's record. Mrs. Clinton did not have a government email address during her four-year tenure as at the State Department. Her aides took no actions to have her personal emails preserved on department servers at the time, as required by the Federal Records Act. It was only 2 months ago, in response to a new State Department effort to comply with federal record-keeping practices, that Mrs. Clinton's advisors reviewed tens of thousands of pages of her personal emails and decided which ones to turn over to the State Department. All told, 55,000 pages of emails were given to the department. Mrs. Clinton stepped down from the secretary post in early 2013.
You know, Joe, as my mom would have said, they're all doing it now. Governor Cuomo has announced he doesn't want anybody to keep any emails more than 30 days. What do you think that's all about?
90 days, I believe, yes.
90 days. Of course, the idea, we know that President Obama walked around with a BlackBerry because apparently that was the easiest way to sort of keep out of the officialdom during that time. If you're a politician, you probably just are assuming that it can only hurt you to have all of these records. That's why we have a Records Act. And so this is just the nature of the beast, I suspect.
I can't see the evilness in this. I'm trying to because I'm a big advocate of transparency. I think what the governor is doing is far more insidious. That's a direct effort to get rid of information. Hillary, on the other hand, never had a government email. She used her old addresses, like my mother who had AOL back in, I don't know, the 70s, and she still has it. Do they have it then? I think 90s.
No, right.
And has still, because it's hard to change your whole technology. She kept it for comfort, I think. There's no indication that anyone wanted her to move over. There's no indication that she's trying to withhold the records. She has, in fact, turned over thousands of pages and I think could be induced to turn over everything. There's no hint here of anything other than a new policy, a good one that should be obeyed on record keeping was not assiduously done during her administration.
I think that this is just, this came out during the Benghazi stuff.
Yes.
Why didn't they make a big deal about it back then? They're doing it now because we're gearing up for the 2016 presidential election. They're going to try to do whatever they can. And then they have the story about the Clinton's official portrait,
to
bring
amazing.
Back Monica Lewinsky and that whole specter, but somebody on the Times wrote, this guy Mayberry Machiavellian, which I think is pretty funny as a name. Does this mean that Snowden was unable to access her emails?
I laughed at was Jeb Bush, who immediately said, I've got emailed when I was governor. It was all kept perfectly and I gave everything. Jeb Bush has some sleazebag who's running his media campaign right now. They had to get rid of him because he was slinging porn and stuff online. This is a new area of government record keeping and there are going to be missteps. I just don't see the evilness in
there
this.
Is no evil here. Yeah. It's really the evil here is trying to start slinging mud so far in advance of November 2016.
But I do wish you would declare.
May I play devil's advocate for a moment?
Oh, sure.
Maybe.
Yes, and do it for me, too.
All right. So here's
you'll represent Orange, yeah.
Well, I hopefully I can live up to that. But the fact that this line, Mrs. Clinton's advisors reviewed tens of thousands of pages of her personal emails and decided which ones they would then submit to the State Department.
Yes,
files.
That's why it's troubling. If you have a personal email, then yeah. But
okay.
But there's still a whole process.
So that doesn't seem a little strange. And also,
it seems bad. It's not good. It's not the way it should be done. Libby and I would both agree with that. By the way, what are you representing? Your what? Your gender?
No.
Your politics?
No, he's representing me because I agree with him. I agree with him. I think this thing doesn't smell good. And I think that the defense of Hillary, I just want to know if you would be defending George Bush if you found out that he did the same thing and attributing motives.
Well, okay, let's
to
use
him.
Sarah Palin. She kept her records, her email records and personal files when she was governor. There was a long process and went through the court. She turned over everything. And in fact, it was an embarrassment to the news organizations that had worked hard to get it because there was nothing in there that showed she was other than a hardworking, rather dutiful governor.
So here's my problem with it. Is that we are talking about the Secretary of State, and with all we hear about cybersecurity, all we hear about the hacking of this system and that system, and not that the government systems haven't been hacked, they certainly have.
Right.
But I would feel much better. Alan alluded to the president's BlackBerry. That was a whole thing that we had to get a personal system just for the president so that nothing could get into that device. It would seem to me, as Secretary of State, that whatever... That doesn't seem like you just forget. That's a decision that you make to go off the grid, if you will, and not be a part of that system.
I see, that's the part I don't believe. I think this is a new rule and a new law, and she just stayed on her own. No one objected for four years.
Colin Powell used his own personal email too.
And so did Madeleine Albright. Yeah, that's why the State Department's trying to collect them all now.
Right. So
three wrongs or four wrongs don't make a right. Come on now, guys.
Yeah, but they also make a pattern that's how it was done and there was nothing wrong with it. There's a pattern of behavior.
Well, I agree with you there. I think my problem is that why are we just thinking of this? We've had email for a very long time now, and why is there not a policy to have all of this? But as you were saying, Alan, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, Eric brings some clarity to all of this. He writes, seems to me that staying off the State Department system is a good way to prevent your email showing up on WikiLeaks.
That's what I just said about Snowden not being able to get access. So it's true.
I mean, there certainly is a case to be made for mm-hmm. that. Although, we don't know what service she was using.
I mean, I want to know.
It's like, you know, not Google Docs or
right.
something.
Was it, AOL or Gmail right. or NICAP.RR.com or whatever they have down in Westchester for Roadrunner? I mean.
And Deanne checks in and says, since every week the president's message to the public is followed by a rebuttal from the Republicans, will that happen today with the president's side being presented after Netanyahu's talk? Well, I do think, to be honest with you, it's a little bit different that the president of the United States can get on our airways or anybody else's as soon as he walks into that room in the White House. I mean, I don't think he's being deprived of being able to say anything about this.
Right. And he did a pretty good job yesterday.
But also the Republicans' views are being presented first via Netanyahu. So come on.
All right. Yeah. So we move on to other issues. We can take one more before we go to a break. And while we were talking about it and while Libby brought it up, let's talk about the portrait artist who said that he painted Lewinsky reference in Bill Clinton's official painting. This came out yesterday. A cursory glance at the official painting of President Bill Clinton that is part of the National Portrait Gallery collection would easily miss an ode to the lowest point of his presidency, Monica Lewinsky. But it is there. The artist revealed in an interview with the Philadelphia Daily News that Nelson Shanks cunningly included a shadow over the fireplace cast from a blue dress on a mannequin. Now, it's a very weird thing because, first of all, to me in this painting, Bill Clinton looks more like Ted Koppel than he looks like Bill Clinton.
So that's the real offense. Oh,
that's the real offense.
It's a very bad painting.
Yes.
It's a very bad painting.
But also, I don't know who would get the reference if it just is. It looks like a shadow from the fern on top of the mantle and not of a dress. But it seems very odd. It seems rude to mention it at this point. And I don't know. If I were Clinton, I'd call for a do-over.
I think they should have vetted the portrait artists more carefully than they did. You know, it's a long tradition in art history. It's a long tradition in art history that you make a little joke like this. Michelangelo painted. You can see it in his paintings where he paints people writhing and dying in pain and hell, and on their flayed skin are the faces of his enemies. I sort of like that, you know. And but you don't pay that person to do your portrait. You know, you want someone who kind of likes you. Or
I was expecting a little Monica was here above the filigree right below the mantle, you know, or something like that. But who knows whether this is true or not, or whether this guy's just making it up to get some
interest
more
in his picture.
His picture, or
exactly.
And does he expect any other president to hire him to paint his portrait? I don't think so.
Well, also, the painting has not been in public view for 3 years. They took it down from the National Portrait Gallery. It has not been in rotation. So I think that, to your point, that it may not have perhaps the thing he was looking for was some relevancy that to get it back into the rotation. But it just seems very, very odd. But you do wonder if you can ask for a do-over.
Yeah. Or a duel.
Or a duel. Yeah. You know,
on the, let's get Alexander Hamilton and that other guy, Raymond Burback.
Raymond Burr. That's right. Pretty funny. Yeah.
Sorry about that, Raymond Burr.
That would be a much different duel.
Right. From a chair. Sorry,
much,
folks.
Much different duel.
My,
all right, let's take a break. We'll come back.
Popular culture slip.
To the roundtable at WMC. Yeah, that if you legalize.
In some state, I don't remember which
Utah.
State it is.
Utah. We're just talking in the break that Utah is considering a bill that would allow patients with certain debilitating conditions to be treated with edible forms of marijuana. If the bill passes, the state's wildlife may cultivate a taste for the plant, lose their fear of humans, and basically be high all the time. That's according to testimony presented to a Utah Senate panel last week by an agent of the DEA.
You know, they could already...
Matt
could
Fairbanks
already...
says, I deal in facts, I deal in science, and the bunnies are going to be high.
Okay. Well, for all the people that are growing marijuana in their backyards or between the corn stalks or whatever it is, the bunnies could already get high because it's out there in nature, and they could just go and get it.
And how do you know if a bunny is...
They kind of wobble. And they do fall down, unlike the weebles.
Do they?
And they start acting like bugs.
Do they have as bugs much bunny
and they
sex?
Get pulled. They get.
Do they have as much? Probably more like bunnies, like rabbits.
And they get pulled over to the side of the road every
That's
once
right.
in a while.
That's right. Right.
All
You're
right.
Speeding.
We have one more story to talk about, and that is the suit by the. Nurse who was treated for Ebola, and we want to get into that. Alan, you want to last call on the letters?
Yeah, well, there is Michael checks in and says, if you look carefully, it's not the shadow of a blue dress. The dress is actually silver. Now we're getting into some real
I think we need
here.
Devil with a Blue Dress on background music.
That's
today.
Actually, that's a great comment. Yes. That's a very funny comment. Yeah, it depends on how you see it and look at it.
Isn't everything
right? But the important is the foolish artist who really wants the publicity and gets out there and shoots off his big mouth. That's what it's really about.
Yes. It's really about what is.
that's profound.
That was good, Libby.
Kafka would have liked that.
Yes. Movie. Well, that's what he said. Don't we remember? It's all according to what your definition of is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else, Alan? Or are we good?
There's a couple of things here, but nothing that I want to
you care to endorse,
except for Andrew, who is just a lovely gentleman, who says the best part of this morning's show are Alan's dropouts.
Oh, that's not nice.
The best part of waking
cheap shot. That he's sitting at home feeling bad about himself, and he wants to dump on somebody else. Not good.
All right, so let's move on.
He's sending you his therapy bill next week.
We've all decided, we decided, Alan, unless you have something, we were going to skip the Warren Buffett bank story because none of us really understand it. So instead, we're going to talk about the nurse who was the first person to contract Ebola in the United States, filed suit on Monday against the Dallas hospital where she works, saying it knowingly left workers without the training or equipment needed to handle the disease. Nina Pham, 26 years old, was one of the two at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital who were infected while treating Thomas Eric Duncan, who had the virus when he arrived from the West African country of Liberia. And she is filing suit in state district court in Dallas, accusing the hospital's parent company of negligence, fraud, and invasion of privacy. And I don't know. It seems that there were concerns from the very beginning about the handling of this on behalf of the hospital. So I guess it should not come as a complete shock that there is a suit against the hospital for their handling of this affair.
My prediction is it will be settled. Out of court.
Exactly this, what I was going to say.
This hospital cannot defend how it behaved.
I don't know that that's it. What happens is that Rosemary, is that the insurance companies say, okay, if we settle this, and it makes me crazy when I see this in institutions. If we settle this and give her, you know, $100,000, that'll be less than $1 million if we have to do it. So they settle over the good name of the hospital all the time. I'm less sympathetic than you are.
Sympathetic. I'm not sympathetic at all. I think the hospital did an atrocious job, and her suit is very, very based on fact. She should win, but the hospital will settle to get out of paying, as you say, a much larger settlement than what they're really liable for. Her life was a mess.
Right, and she's still
sick. She was tracked. She's still losing her hair and is exhausted. She lost. You remember she was engaged, and they took all of her possessions, and they took her engagement ring. She couldn't have it anymore because they didn't. They did. I don't know. It was ridiculous. So some company gave it back to her. But she went through a really bad time, and I hope she gets a lot of money for this.
Well, we know that the hospital didn't deal with this well right from the start.
Absolutely.
You know, here's a poor black guy from out of the country who comes in sick, no insurance. They sent him home with some aspirin, you know, and then he comes back and dies. And, you know, they should have done better at the beginning of this whole process and done due diligence with this man and did the test he needed to have done to figure out what was wrong.
Well, you know, it's very in the very beginning. I think obviously things have been changed. The procedures have been changed since that time. You can't walk into an emergency room or a doctor's office anywhere without seeing that sign.
Right.
Yeah.
Asking if you've been somewhere. By the way, I just wanted to say that Julius, as always, is thinking about what we're saying here. And he comes up and he says, based on the bunny discussion, so now we know what caused the rabbit attack on Jimmy Carter.
Oh, there you go.
The bunny was high.
Yes, he was high and had
you remember
lost
that?
His heart.
That was great. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. All right, anything else on the
nurse?
On the nurse? Mailbag? No, we're good. Yeah, anything else in the mailbag?
No.
If not, I'll move on to another story. I hate to do it to you, but I'm going to mention the banks.
Okay.
All right, here we go. So the
see if we can make sense of it in like 5 minutes.
Right.
Well, maybe that's all it deserves.
Or less.
Okay, so money shufflers don't come cheap. That was Warren Buffett's latest salvo against Wall Street from his annual letter to shareholders published over the weekend. Mr. Buffett has long ridiculed the financial industry, but this year's letter, laced with references to bankers, lawyers, and consultants as a lot of mouths with expensive tastes, seemed to amp up what was clearly noted by the industry, which poured over the letter. Mr. Buffett used his annual letter not only to describe the performance of Berkshire Hathaway, but also to warn or educate his faithful followers about the street's denizens, quote, and how they, quote, are always ready to suspend disbelief when dubious maneuvers are used to manufacture a rising per share earnings, particularly if these acrobatics precede mergers that generate huge fees for investment bankers.
Okay. you know, the investment bankers are bad.
So in other
Wall
words,
Street is bad.
They're weasels, right? Is that basically what he's saying?
Yeah.
Beware of the weasels?
Yeah, it's what we've known all along.
And this is written by a man who's made an awful lot of money by
a boatload
communing with these people and dealing with these people. So what are we to take of this? He's a good billionaire. There's good billionaires and bad billionaires. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
No, well, at least he tells the truth. I mean, he does commune with these folks, and he hires them, and he buys them, and all of that. But so he's an insider who's telling the truth. I love that. I think that's why he's most beloved billionaire in the United States.
Yeah, why do you think that is? Because he does tend to get a pass in the.
He loves him. Paul McCartney.
Yeah, he's a regular old guy. He wears flannel shirts.
He likes newspapers.
And not only that, he's leaving all his money to
charity.
He's leaving all his money, you know, to charity, and he says kids can take care of themselves. His kids can take care of themselves. Hey, this is my kind of billionaire.
Well, it's all fascinating. We did make sense of that. See.
Just why did he do it?
Yeah.
Why is he?
Eisenhower said half a page of paper and no more.
I think he did it.
There's nothing that can't be said in half a page. Yeah.
I think he did it so that people would look to Berkshire Hathaway as another avenue for investing their money.
A more reputable.
PR.
Right.
It's PR.
PR and they're coming into this market. Their real estate, his real estate company is coming into this market.
Absolutely.
Now.
So, taking over many Prudential
right.
locations.
And then he comes out, I'm with the little guy. So the little guy will say,
no.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't agree. I love the guy.
Oh, I think he's great. And I, you know, but you know.
I'm suspicious. You know, all right. Billionaire.
Well, no kidding.
Yeah. No, but it came, Forbes said that Bill Gates is the number one in the country.
Yeah, that was that was the release this morning. All right. Well, we're out of time. Thank you very much. Alan, good luck with the car and the tires.
Yeah, well, yeah, keep on rolling.
All right. Thank you, Rosemary. Libby, thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow. More roundtable coming up after this.